Oh, you're right, but I will not just leave her in there. I... Shh, I hissed. I wanted to hear what the Carnites were saying, but I couldn't make it out over him talking. He snapped his mouth shut, then turned his head to try to listen with me.
Are you going? Who are you, little human?
One Carnite said.
Who cares who she is? Meat on bones, meat in mouth. We should eat the tasty morsel.
The first Carnite smacked the second one across the back of its head.
You are too stupid, her. How she see us? She not a morsel? No, she may be a dragon?
Eva looked at it right in the eyes, and even from where Cairo and I were hiding, I could see that her helpless, scared expression was faked. That was Eva, always keeping her head on straight and looking for the opportunities. She said, "What's a dragon? There's no such thing as dragons. Everyone knows that." The Carnite looked doubtful. He said,
"If you not a dragon, why you in the jungle? Where you village? Why you see us?"
Eva shrugged. Her crisp, clear voice carried to our ears easily. "You ask a lot of questions. I'm just a helpless human, walking in the jungle for the same reason you are, I bet. I was gathering lilacost. They're perfect for the flower arrangements we make back in my village. It's just north of here." The second Carnite scratched its head, then after a second said,
"What's a lilacost?"
Eva kept her face perfectly straight from what I saw from my hiding spot, and said,
"About 20 bucks, if it's arranged well."
I groaned inside. She was caught by Carnites and surrounded, and she was making jokes? Part of me envied her courage, and the other part of me wanted her to be quiet before she got herself killed. I whispered, "I don't think we have much time. Got any ideas?" Cairo got back up to his hands and knees and looked at Eva. He was very quiet for a few moments, then said,
"Actually, I do. If we're going to save her, we need two things. First, a distraction. Then, a way to slow the Carnites down after we grab her."
That made sense. Better yet, it was pretty simple. Now the only question was how to do the two things. I remembered how we had lured away the Eldin in the jungle and thought that might work again, especially since the Carnites weren't the brightest creatures on Earth.
"Okay, you can do that trick where you make every tree look and smell like us, right? So if you handle that and I handle the distraction, we might be able to do this."
Cairo nodded. It was about as good of a plan as we could get, at least in the time we had available. He was about to say something, but I held up my hand to shush him. The Carnites were talking again.
"The morsel lies. I never see no lilacosts here. No bucks, too. How we get the truth from it?"
The other Carnite, the one who'd been smacked, shrugged its giant shoulders.
"They could be real. Maybe new name for old thing. I bet King Eldric would know."
Then it chuckled, and the sound sent a shiver down my spine.
"And he uses strong powers, gets the truth for us."
Eva let out a little chirp of shock. She blurted,
"You work for King Eldric? You know you can't trust him, right? Whatever he promised you, it's a lie."
The first Carnite shook its head.
"No. King Eldric make promise. We work for him. We work for promise."
Eva shook her head.
"You're making a mistake, I promise you. What did he say he'd give you? It can't be worth being his slave."
The two Carnites began to argue amongst themselves, and I couldn't tell what they were saying anymore. Their accent was just too thick when they were angry. They were shoving each other back and forth. I hoped they would get in a fight, giving us the distraction we were looking for, but I didn't count on it. I kept trying to think of other options. In a couple of seconds, however, they settled down. Then the second one told Eva,
"Eldric promised Carnites their own home. A Carnite king. Carnites get all of the Congo. New Carnite homeland. We get a home. Just like stupid elves. Stupid trolls. All we have to do is help him get rid of dragons."
I filed that away, hoping it might be useful later. At least now we knew what the Carnites were doing and that their attacks were directed. not random. We suspected it before, but now we could be sure.
Cairo whispered, "Now they have a plan, taking Eva to King Eldric. We can't let that happen. We can't let them split up the Keeper of Dragons, Cole."
He was right, but we still needed that distraction. I had an idea, though. I remembered the brilliant light that came from the Maahir ropes the dragons had used when they rescued me and Eva from the Karnites the last time. I wondered if we could use it to tie their ankles together. Big Karnites would probably fall hard, right? At least, that was my idea. I told Cairo and he didn't look enthusiastic, but he hadn't come up with any ideas of his own yet. I heard Eva say,
"Where are the elves and trolls? You helped get rid of them, right? If you didn't, he wouldn't give you the Congo, so I bet you did help. Where did he take them? Or didn't he tell you?"
The first Karnite sat up straighter, lifting his chin in the air as he said,
"King Eldric tell us. We took elves there. Took trolls there."
Then it leaned forward until his face was only a foot from Eva's and said loudly,
"But we not tell you, little morsel, fake village girl. You think we stupid, but we not."
Eva said,
"I don't think you're stupid. I think you're very smart to want your own homeland. People must underestimate you all the time, right? King Eldric did. He got you to help him, even with no guarantee he would give you the Congo. He must think you're really dumb."
She shook her head slowly, looking sympathetic. Cairo whispered to me,
"That idea could work, but do you know how to do it? Binding things with your maw here takes a lot of energy."
At least this concern I had an answer to.
"No, I don't know how to do it with my maw here. Fortunately for us, though, I'm a lot better at controlling my tilium. I bet I can do something like it with the pharaoh energy I took."
"I'm not a betting dragon, but it looks like we don't have much of a choice. You think you can do it, so I guess we'll have to try. It's just too bad you're betting on Eva's life at the same time."
He was right. I was betting I could do it with my tilium, and if I failed, she'd be gone, or dead. Still, I felt reasonably confident that I could make it happen, and what other choice did I have? I couldn't think of any. One Karnite said,
"Enough. Tasty morsel thinks she can fool Karnites. Everyone think Karnites stupid."
Oh, great. Now they were repeating themselves. It continued,
"We smart enough to know to take Dragon Girl to King Eldric. We smart enough to know you not village girl."
It had practically shouted that last sentence, and as it sat on its knees, it began to bounce up and down, smashing its tree club into the dirt next to it, and crying out a deep animal grunting, like what I imagined gorillas would do when they were excited.
"Cairo, we've got to do something right now. As soon as I manifest the bindings, you create the illusion. Can you make it sound like someone who is crashing through the bushes just south of us?"
He raised one eyebrow and nodded, and I guessed he hadn't thought of it himself. The Karnites would chase that noise, hopefully, leading them away from Eva.
It was worth a shot.
I closed my eyes and focused on bringing out my tilium. I willed it to stretch from my hands and fingers out toward the Karnites. As it went farther and farther, it got thinner and thinner, going from a cone to a tight focus, looking like a rope. I made it slither across the jungle floor, and when it reached them, I had it wind in and out between their ankles. I tied it in knots as it went. The Karnites would be in for a rude surprise when they started chasing the distraction. Then, using my maw here, I pushed outward with my mind until it enveloped all three Karnites. I focused on putting thoughts into their heads. I wanted it to sound like a scream coming from behind them when I alerted them that we were here. I felt my maw here sliding into their heads fairly easily. I didn't think I could have controlled them or done anything super exciting while I was inside their heads. I had a feeling that their stupidity somehow protected them from the worst of what a dragon could do. Not that I knew how to do the worst. I took a deep breath and then mentally screamed the words into their heads.
"Elves! Trolls! They're coming to take the girl! They want the reward for themselves!"
In an instant, all three Karnites were standing, looking around. Then they heard the phantom sounds of people crashing around in the bushes to the south. The first two, who had been arguing, moved faster than I thought possible as they tried to run after the noise. I would sure hate to try to outrun those things without a good head start. Halfway through their steps, my tilium rope went tight and they crashed to the ground. I could feel the ground shake even from that distance, and the noise was terrible. Only one problem. The third Carnite hadn't left with the others. It had stayed with Eva. I said, "Go get her." Then I focused on stretching out my tilium again, going back over their ankles and weaving the two threads together to make them stronger. Then I yanked my hands back, drawing the tilium ropes tight. Cairo sprinted toward the third Carnite, and although it saw the movement coming out of the jungle, it didn't seem to be able to make sense of what it was seeing. It stared at Cairo dumbly until almost the last second. When Cairo was 5 feet away, he leapt into the air and swung his sword over his head with both hands, bringing it down on the Carnite's skull. Eva jumped to her feet and ran back the way Cairo had come, heading toward me. I threw my hand out, shooting a tilium rope at the third one's tree trunk club. It wrapped around it and the club slowed, but it didn't stop. It snapped my tilium rope in half, but slowing it down had been enough. Cairo dove out of the way. I drew my sword and rushed out into the open area between my hiding spot and where they had been questioning Eva. I ran right at the third Carnite, passing Eva going the other way. I didn't have time to worry about what she was doing. The Carnite tried to raise its club again, but it was too slow. I ran by and swung my sword as hard as I could, one-handed, and felt it bite deep into the creature's gut. I turned and saw that Cairo hadn't slowed down when he dodged the club. He kept running and then jumped onto the two bound Carnites. From the dirt, the two simply stared, apparently not believing their own eyes. In moments, Cairo had ended their threat permanently. Eva came walking back into the clearing, looking around and nodding as though impressed. I wanted to yell at her, shout at her for leaving in the middle of the night without telling anyone, but we didn't have time. The Carnite I had cut was badly wounded, and if we wanted to get any information from it, we had to ask quickly. We didn't ask fast enough, though. It didn't get the chance to say anything before it died, joining its two friends wherever Carnites went when they died. I looked at Cairo and said, "That wasn't quite the plan, but it worked. I'm sorry we couldn't get this one to talk before it died." He shrugged and said, "I'm sorry too, but that's the way of war." Chapter 10. Cairo leaned on his sword, catching his breath. He glanced up at Eva, and his face turned even redder than usual. I understood just how he felt, too. She almost got herself killed, and us. None of the Carnites were still alive, so most of our questions were still unanswered. Eva looked at him for a couple of seconds, then exploded.
"What are you looking at?"
I couldn't tell if it was a challenge or a real question, but it made him stand bolt upright. He waved his hand to show the jungle around us and shouted,
"You shouldn't have run off like that. How could you just get up and leave without telling anyone? Don't you know?"
She cut him off, shouting back at him,
"And why do you even care? Come on, tell me. And don't say it's because you're my guardian. I'm not an idiot, and I felt something from you, right?"
She put her fists on her hips and faced him directly. Her voice had sounded as much like she was asking as she was telling him. He got a little twitch by his left eye as he turned away. He bent down to begin cleaning his sword as best he could with a bit of grass. He had his back to Eva, and I glanced over to see what she would do. Instead of yelling at him some more, as I thought she would, she walked over to me and stood shoulder to shoulder. She said,
"You know, I thought he actually liked me. Not just because he was forced to be around me. He should have been glad when I left, so he didn't have to be responsible for me anymore."
She said it just loud enough to make sure Cairo heard her. I took a deep breath and let it out slowly, feeling the frustration build. Instead of answering her, I changed the subject. "So, you think these Carnites were working for Eldric, or did they just wander into the area?" She looked at me like I was an idiot.
"Oh, come on. I know you heard them say they were going to turn me into King Eldric and he was giving them the Congo. Now you're just stalling. You're as bad as he is."
She stomped away and sat down, leaning against a tree at the edge of the clearing. Over by the Carnites, Cairo stood slowly, stretched his back, and then started walking east. Over his shoulder, he said,
"Come on. We shouldn't stay here, and we have a long way to go, thanks to her."
He didn't even look back. I glanced over at Eva and shrugged. When I started following him, Eva fell in line a few feet behind me. It would have been a lot easier to just call out my dragon, but I was far too exhausted to fly. I was sure they were, too, since no one mentioned the idea. Not only was my ma here about drained, but I was physically exhausted. We walked through the jungle in a straight line, spaced out a little bit, alone with our own thoughts. One of us occasionally stopped and grabbed something edible. With our ma here drained so much, I was sure they were starving just as much as I was. We were in kind of a desperate situation, but there was nothing we could do but keep walking. So, we did. After a few more hours, Eva finally caught up to me. Her hands were in her pockets and her eyes were on the ground, watching where she put her feet so she didn't fall. I also thought it might be her way of not having to look at anyone. I mean, even as clumsy as I was, I still managed to glance up every once in a while. That's how I knew Eva had caught up. Quietly, I said, "How are you doing? I know you've got to be exhausted." She nodded.
"Yeah, I'm tired, and half the reason I'm so exhausted is that I'm starving."
I simply nodded. It was all true, so what could I say? We walked on in silence for a few minutes, but I noticed she kept up with me, always beside me. Maybe she had something on her mind, but I wasn't going to push. Eventually, she said,
"Actually, I do have something on my mind. I mean, besides just how hungry I am. It's Cairo. Don't you think he's been acting a little weird lately? Like, every time I come around, he stops laughing or talking. I keep catching him looking at me out of the corner of my eye."
I began to feel a little uncomfortable. I never really liked to get caught up in the middle of Eva and other people. She could be unpredictable and wild, and sometimes her frustration got pointed at me. It was the last thing I wanted to deal with, as tired as I was. She kept looking at me like she expected a response, though. "Maybe he's just keeping an eye on you, since that's his job."
"Maybe, but I think it's more than that. I thought we were getting along really well, you know? And then all of this. Now, I think he was just trying to get along because it made his job easier. I don't think he really liked me at all."
I felt my heat rise and I began to sweat. Part of me wanted to tell her the truth, just to get it out in the open, and because it would make her feel better. She clearly cared what Cairo thought of her. But before I opened my mouth, I decided it wasn't my place to say anything. I knew how he felt, but only because he told me. It was up to him to tell Eva when he wanted to, so I tried to dodge it. "What's not to like about you? Sure, you're headstrong and stubborn, and you do reckless things, mostly because you're way braver than I am. But you're also a really good person. That's why you decided to be my friend, right? You were the only person at school who took a chance to get to know me." Then I forced myself to laugh a little and said, "Then again, look how that worked out for you." She let out a deep sigh, but we walked on in silence for quite a while. I didn't know how much later it was, but eventually she said,
"Cole, do you think I did the right thing going after the mermaids?"
She hesitated a bit, and I could hear the worry in her voice.
"Right now, it seems like it might have been kind of foolish."
Of course, she was worried. She'd made a decision that should have been all of ours, one that could spell victory or doom for the dragons, all the other mythical creatures, and even humankind itself. "Of course you did the right thing. I mean, running off like that was stupid, but sometimes you do stupid stuff." I turned my head to look at her and grinned. When I got a faint smile back, I continued, "But seriously, I don't think we really had any other choice, so yes, I think you did the right thing. Most of the elves are already captured, and the rest have limited Tilium until their wards are restored. We don't know where the loyalties lie for most of the other magical creatures, so going to Greece wasn't a great option." Her face showed a bit of relief. She ran her fingers through her sweat-damp hair, pushing it back out of her face.
"We don't know where the loyalties of the mermaids are either, though.
All the things we've heard about them tell me they aren't rushing to join up with Eldric. They may only be minor players up here on land with us dragons, but water covers most of the earth. Why would they want to sign up to be Eldric's slaves when they're the masters of most of the planet?"
She put her hand on my back as we sat down side by side.
"Thanks, Cole. I knew I could count on you for the truth, even if I didn't want to hear it. You're a good guy, you know? That's the biggest reason I decided to be your friend way back in the day. But doesn't that seem like a whole different lifetime ago?"
I chuckled.
"Yeah, it does, I think."
Out in the jungle, off to my right, I heard a sudden, loud crack. It rolled over us and echoed off the trees and hills like thunder, deep and rumbling. I fought down the sudden urge to run,
Then I heard another crack, another rumble. This time, though, it came from somewhere to our left. Eva and I looked at each other, eyes wide with shock and fear.
Chapter 11.
As the sounds grew louder, we took off running at the same time. Whatever was coming at us, I sure didn't want to meet it. We jumped over fallen logs, went around trees, and once, I grabbed a vine without slowing down to swing over a coiled snake. I didn't know what kind it was, and I was pretty sure my ma here would be able to handle a snake bite just fine, but it would slow me down. I felt the sweat building on the back of my neck and on my forehead, and after half a mile, I was panting. The whole time we ran, whatever was crashing through the jungle was getting closer. We had been running a few miles when I heard the deep, frightening noise right behind me. I risked a glance over my shoulder, but what I saw surprised me. It wasn't some strange beast, and it wasn't a Karnite. It was an Eldin. I saw it reach out and somehow zap a tree with its tilium. The tree was only damaged, though, not even destroyed. That was what had been making the noise. I saw the Eldin were stretched out in a row, half a dozen that I could see. They were randomly zapping trees as they ran toward us. There was no way I wanted to get hit with that, though I was curious why they were shooting trees, so I ran even faster. We had to put some distance between us and them because even if the ones I saw were all of them, we were outnumbered. I was pretty sure there were more I hadn't seen. As I caught up to Cairo, I said, "Run faster! It's the Eldin, shooting trees! At least six of them!" Eva and Cairo sped up. Another mile went by, and I could hear the Eldin finally falling farther behind. We were getting away. I was exhausted, but I had my tilium to draw from. I knew we were all low on Ma here, yet they kept up. Cairo and Eva were just in better shape than me, I guessed. The jungle kept going on and on, but there was no way to tell how much farther it stretched. I hoped it didn't run out before we could escape and hide again, though I wasn't sure where to hide if they were zapping all the trees. I sure didn't want to get mistaken for a tree. Cairo's trick, where he made their tilium senses see all the trees looking like us, wouldn't work now that they were just blasting away. I wondered how they had had enough tilium to keep that going. I was in the middle of that thought when Cairo let out a yelp. I turned to look and saw him streaking up into the air. I skidded to a stop and turned back, then realized he had stumbled into a simple old-fashioned net trap. In the distance, the rumbling sound of the Eldin's blasting continued. Without hesitating, Eva jumped up and grabbed onto a lower branch, then scrambled up the tree like a monkey. In moments, I'd lost sight of her, but shortly after, Cairo came crashing to the ground, wrapped in the net. I helped him get out of the net, then we looked up into the tree. From above, I heard Eva shouting, "Get up here! Hurry!" I didn't know what she had in mind, but we didn't have time to argue. Cairo and I scrambled up the trunk and found ourselves in the dense foliage. It took a while, but two scratches on my face and one small cut on my hand later, we reached Eva. Panting, I asked,
"Why are we up here?"
Eva held up her hand to be quiet. I saw that she had her eyes closed. The seconds ticked by. Then she said,
"Instead of making all the trees look like us, I'm making us blend in with this tree."
"When they blast this tree, is that going to matter?" Cairo asked.
She said, almost in a whisper,
"They won't shoot us up this high. When they had almost caught up to us, one of them did that thing to a tree just ahead of me, and it hit about chest high. They're only checking to see if we've disguised ourselves as trees."
I nodded, then heard the sound of movement below. I looked, but I couldn't see anything through the leaves. We sat silently, waiting. Cairo had his eyes closed and his lips were moving, but I couldn't hear what he was saying. And I heard the sounds of Eldin everywhere below us, stretching out to either direction, way more than six of them. After they had passed, I realized I had been holding my breath and let it out. Cairo said,
"That was way too close. Something is definitely wrong here."
"Why do you say that?" Eva asked. "I mean, we got away, right?"
"How are they following us?"
He turned to look at me. I shrugged.
"I don't think they're following us. They must just know the area and they're looking as hard as they can, but they're not following us, I think."
Cairo let out a long, frustrated breath.
"No way. This is twice now that they've come right at us. Once, I could see. Twice? That's deliberate. Elden are evil, but they've never followed us like this. I wish I knew what was going on.
I didn't know either, so I didn't answer. After enough time had passed for the Elden to be long gone, we carefully climbed down and made camp for the night. Back in the land of ice and snow and the beautiful lights in the sky, I hovered over the field. Again, it felt more like a vision than a dream. Midway through it, I realized I really was dreaming, but I couldn't wake up, so I just watched. When I awoke, it wasn't the panic-filled jolt that made me sit bolt upright, the way the others had. I just opened my eyes, and I knew I had to tell Eva and Cairo. They were still asleep, so I settled back into the leaves I used for bedding and slept restlessly until morning. Once everybody was fully awake, I said, "So, I had another dream." Cairo rolled his eyes, but Eva frowned and asked,
"What was it about this time?"
"Eldric is there, in the north, with the missing elves. He's giving them each a choice, either join him and become dark elves, or lose their Tilium. Most of them are taking the deal from what I saw. He's turning them, one by one. It seemed to take a long time to turn each one into a dark elf, but Eldric has time."
"Thanks for calling them dark elves," Cairo said. "Those are not Elden, whatever deal they're making. They're still my friends. Gaber's family."
I nodded. No surprise he had caught that, but it just didn't feel right calling them Elden. They weren't really Elden, they were just elves who had gone dark.
"I think the Elden are like that forever. I hope they get the chance to come back to the light someday."
Eva put her hand on Cairo's shoulder sympathetically.
"I think the longer they're dark, the harder it will be. We have to hurry. If we don't rescue them soon, Eldric will have a new army of dark elves behind him."
At last, Cairo blew out a harsh breath and said,
"It is what it is. We need to get to the mermaids quickly, and I just hope that, when they join us, they have what we need to go rescue our friends."
I hoped so too. Chapter 12. As we soared through the clouds, I could see the shores of the Dead Sea far ahead. Thankfully, once our Maher had recharged a bit, we had all been able to summon our dragons. We kept our speed slow, so we didn't need to spend Maher on keeping the air around us still. And after a bit, I had more energy. I felt a little tingling in my mind and realized Eva was trying to talk, so I opened up my perceptions and let her in. We had spent most of the journey in silence, so I was curious. "Is everything okay?"
"Yes, I'm fine. I've just been thinking about these visions or whatever they are. You say they feel different from a normal dream, right?"
"Yes." I was interested to see where this was going.
"I have lots of dreams, and nightmares even, about Eldric, but sometimes they just feel different. I know in my gut they aren't dreams." "I didn't really believe you before, but you keep having them. And you've never been the kind of guy to make things up. Heck, it took you longer to believe in all this dragon stuff than me."
Finally, someone was paying attention. I'd figured if anyone would believe me, it'd be Eva, and it had hurt when she'd dismissed me. Excited, I asked,
"So I take it you've been thinking about this? Got any ideas?" "No, but I think it's important for us to figure out where these dreams are coming from. The more I think about them, the more they scare me."
That was surprising.
"Even if they're visions, not just dreams, I don't see why they would scare you. They scare me, but I'm the one with the nightmares." "But we don't know why you're having them, and I have to wonder if Eldric is somehow using them against you. Your visions are just as likely to be coming from him as from anywhere else, right? Maybe more likely. And if he's sending them, it's not to help you. What trick does he have up his sleeve? If he's sending them, he has a sneaky plan."
That was definitely something to think about. I hadn't considered that before, but I didn't really have time to think about it at the moment. Cairo banked down into the left, heading toward the Dead Sea shoreline. We were finally there, where the mermaids were supposed to live. I heard Cairo's voice in my head saying,
"Look alive, keepers. We're here, and we don't know what kind of reception we'll get."
We swept downward, flying low above the scattered trees, and landed about 20 feet from the water. I managed to land without doing a face plant, so it was a good landing as far as I was concerned. Then we called our humans and shifted. We wandered around the beach, slowly making our way toward the water. I wasn't really sure what to look for, but I figured if there were mermaids around, I'd see something unusual. We searched an area about 100 feet long between the scattered tree line and the water, but none of us found anything worth mentioning. Cairo whistled, and we all gathered together by the water.
I don't really understand. The last time I was here was maybe a century ago. But they had lines of shells and trees planted in different formations, showing us where to find them. I didn't see any of that from the air, and I'm not seeing it here on the ground. I wonder where they went.
He scratched his head, and I looked past him, out over the water, trying to imagine what a mermaid city would look like down there. Then I noticed ripples in the water, and my eyes went wide. Cairo spun around to see what I was looking at, then froze. At least a dozen people were rising up out of the water. I knew right away that they were mermaids, from the watery plants woven into their braided hair to the slightly blue skin. I thought I saw flaps behind the ears of one who turned to look at the others, but I couldn't be sure. I also didn't know how they would get out of the water, but then they just walked right out, legs and all. Each of them carried a short spear or trident. They were a couple inches shorter than most people, and I could see webbed fingers wrapped around their weapons. I was a little disappointed they didn't have fishtails. The 12 of them kept their weapons pointed toward us and moved into a circle, with us in the middle. I found myself turning my back to Cairo and saw Eva do the same, so the 3 of us were facing outward at the mermaids. One, who was a deeper shade of blue than the others, said,
"Hold! Put down your weapons! I warn you to do as I say!"
His voice had a sort of wet, bubbly sound, and came out raspy. Along with his sharp, pointy teeth and big, fin-like ears, the water plants woven into his green hair, green glowing eyes, he looked kind of creepy. I slowly drew my sword, then tossed it into the sand a few feet away.
Cairo hissed, "What are you doing, Keeper?"
I could hear the concern in his voice. He might even have been afraid. I said, "We're here to see the mermaids, aren't we? Well, they're not going to talk to us while we're armed. There's too many of them for us to fight off anyway. Just do what they say and trust in fate." I heard 2 more swords land in the sand. Thank goodness, because I hadn't been sure Cairo would do it. The mermaid nodded.
"That was smart of you. I will ask you this once. What do dragons want with mermaids? You wanted nothing to do with us when we needed your help, but now you come here alone. We hear things about what is going on out there, so you're either here to ask for help or to demand it. In either case, you have wasted your trip. Leave or die."
Cairo held up both hands and took 1 step toward the leader.
"I don't think you understand the situation. This is the time of fear, and those 2 with me are the Keeper of Dragons, the Golden Dragon and the Prince. Your queen will want to hear of this."
The dark blue mermaid lowered his trident a little. His gaze clicked over me and Eva, then back to Cairo.
"You lie. They are too young."
Cairo shook his head.
"No, they grew up within a mile of each other, among the humans. You think that's a coincidence?" "Then they grew in strength so close to each other. But that's impossible."
Cairo shrugged.
"It's very possible. And it's the truth. All signs point to the time of fear. We've come to ask the help of the mermaids, and I know we failed in our duty to you once, but if the elves and trolls can forgive us for our foolish century, maybe Queen Desla can, too."
The mermaid turned to the others and said something that sounded like trying to sing while gargling water. The soldiers kept their spears and tridents pointed at us and inched closer. Their leader said,
"Come, I will take you to our queen. Not as guests, but as prisoners. She will decide what to do with you."
From his tone of voice, I got the impression he hoped they would just kill us and be done with it. It seemed O'Connor had a lot of making up to do for whatever they had done in the past to all these different peoples. We were prodded toward the water, and I wondered if they were just going to drown us. Cairo didn't seem concerned, so I hesitantly followed him. Chapter 13. I found myself holding my breath, which made sense because I was underwater. Half a minute later, I panicked. I turned and tried to run back to shore, but it was really more like thrashing. As soon as my head broke the surface, I took deep gasps. I hadn't even worried about the mermaids with spears. When I turned back around, I found the mermaid standing half out of the water, staring at me. Cairo and Eva looked amused, while our captors looked irritated. I looked at Cairo and said, "What?" Eva rolled her eyes. "Didn't you pay attention during our training?" Eva paused and shook her head at me. "It's just like when we fly and use our mahir to keep the wind from tearing us apart. Use it to lock a bubble of air around your head and just draw fresh oxygen from the water." Cairo shook his head and let out a frustrated sigh, like he was dealing with toddlers.
"You both need to pay more attention during training. Anytime someone with power, mahir, or tilium, goes into the water with mermaids around, you can just breathe the water. It doesn't even get into your lungs. I mean, as long as they aren't trying to kill you."
I felt my face flush. Of course my mahir would work underwater. Of course there was more to it than just mermaids driving us to our doom. Otherwise, Cairo wouldn't have calmly walked into the Dead Sea.
"Okay, I'm sorry. I've never tried to breathe underwater before, so it didn't occur to me that I could."
Cairo turned back around and walked away from the shore.
"Of course it didn't. Stop fooling around and let's go."
We headed back into the water, and although I paused just before my head went under, I took a deep breath and felt my mahir around me. I trusted that way more than I trusted the mermaids to keep me alive down there. My wet clothes stuck to me as we walked for what seemed like a mile, and at first it was really slow going. Then Cairo was in my head, telling me to just use my mahir to open the way, just as we did with the air when we were flying fast. After that, it got a lot easier. I was kind of tired of feeling dumb, and all of that would have been good to know before I embarrassed myself in front of the mermaids. All around us were mermaids swimming faster than I could run on dry land. Only our captors seemed to bother walking, and I got the impression they were only doing it for us. The mermaid town had no walls, just like all the other fantastical creatures' homes I had been to. They must have had wards, though I didn't feel any of it. Cairo explained that their tilium was different from the elves. Once we got to the town proper, my eyes bulged. It was one of the most beautiful things I had ever seen. Every dwelling, every building, had been made to look like seashells or coral, or had been woven out of the many plants that grew all over. I hadn't seen any such plants before we got to the town, so they were probably hidden from outsiders. The light was murky down here, but there were hundreds or even thousands of small, floating globes tethered in place, shining brightly. They gave off enough light to see by. I had noticed our guard's eyes were a lot larger than a human's or elf's, and then I knew why. It was so they could see better in the dim light at the bottom of the Dead Sea. There were no streets, so we did end up having to swim. After a little bit of practice, Cairo taught me how to use my mahir not just to keep myself breathing, but to sort of push myself through the water, almost like swimming. No, more like flying. That would have been a lot more exciting before I had flown halfway around the world as a dragon, but it was still kind of cool. We got to what I assumed was the palace. It was the biggest building in the mermaid town, and the only one that didn't blend perfectly with the nature all around. It was obviously constructed, a large dome with towers all over it. We were led into the castle through a huge arch that spanned 20 feet or more. Inside, it was even more beautiful. There were marble tiles on the floor, marble walls, marble pillars holding the dome up. I wondered whether the pillars were decorative, though, because I thought domes didn't need support. It didn't seem like the right time to ask about the architecture, though, so the three of us meekly followed our guards across the gorgeous foyer, then down a long hall lined with guards standing at attention. We reached a huge set of double doors, and the guards posted there opened them for us. I looked inside and saw what must have been the biggest room in the castle. A dome inside a dome. It was a couple hundred feet across, and I couldn't really tell how high the ceiling was at its peak. There were so many of the glowing balls embedded into the walls that it was almost as bright as daylight. It was a softer glow, though, and it didn't hurt my eyes. With the mermaid's huge eyes, I was surprised it didn't hurt theirs, but they didn't seem to flinch. We were marched up to a lone woman sitting on a raised throne. She stared ahead, looking bored, ignoring the dozens of mermaids wandering around the throne room below her, talking in little groups. When we got closer, a dozen more armed mermaids appeared out of person-sized archways to either side of the platform and formed a semicircle around their queen. I almost didn't notice her because I was so busy looking at the crowd of mermaids. Down in their homeland, they didn't bother with legs. Just like the old drawings, they had tails, but no scales. More like a dolphin's tail. When we got to the platform, one of our captors said, "Kneel before Queen Desla and pay your respects. Pray she is merciful. All hail the queen." I didn't need to be told twice. I knelt right away, as did Cairo. Eva was slower, but followed us down. The room grew quiet, all the hushed conversation stopping at once, and all eyes turned to us. It was pretty intimidating, but there was no backing out. She said,
"What is the meaning of this? Why do dragons invade my realm? Answer true, or die."
That wasn't the warm welcome I had hoped for. Cairo glanced at me and tilted his head towards the queen. He wanted me to talk? I supposed it was up to me as the keeper of dragons. "Hail, Queen Desla of the Mermaids. I'm Cole, the keeper, and this is Eva, the golden dragon. We beg an audience with the queen." I held my breath and prayed what I said was right. Her eyes shifted to Cairo, who only nodded very slightly, and then her eyes were back on me.
"I asked a question, dragon."
My mind raced. What question? Then I remembered. "I'm sorry, but we haven't come to invade. We've come in peace and to warn you." Several of the guards took an angry step toward me, lowering their pitchforks and spears at me. But the queen said quietly,
"Hold."
The guards stepped back into place but eyed me angrily. Hastily, I said,
"Not to warn you about us. I mean, to let you know of danger. As friends."
Desla tilted her head back and laughed. It was a sweet, musical sound. Her eyes showed no joy, though.
"I have no need of protection from you, or from any dragon. Why are you here, and what is your warning? Speak quickly."
I spent the next 20 minutes telling her my story, even the parts I wasn't really proud of. She had to know the whole story to know I was telling the truth about the time of fear arriving. I ended by telling her that the Keeper of Dragons was fated to end the time of fear, but that it was time for the mermaids to play their part, a very important part. She was quiet for a long moment. She stared at me, unblinking. Actually, I had not seen any of them blink, and found myself holding my breath. I had to consciously make myself take even breaths, and my heart was racing. At last, she said,
"Colton, Prince of O'Connor, I have heard your story, and I am unmoved. We are safe here in the water, as we always have been. A few hundred years ago, I might have joined you. But we do not forget that the dragons turned a blind eye to the fighting and suffering of the elves, trolls, and others of our kind. We took in many refugees during that time and lent our soldiers to the elves. Meanwhile, you hid in your clouds and did nothing."
This wasn't going according to plan. I felt the opportunity slipping away. I had to say something.
"My queen, I don't think you—"
"Silence!"
Her shout echoed across the room, and I saw even a couple of soldiers flinch. She must not raise her voice very often, but then again, why would a queen need to? I lowered my eyes so I wasn't looking at her directly and shut my mouth.
I have no wish to harm dragons. Our friendship goes back almost to the beginning, and you've done us no wrong, personally. If the elves and trolls and fairies can forgive you, who am I to hold that grudge for them? So go in peace, Keeper of Dragons. I wish you well, but you will have no mere help. Maybe if you had come sooner, we could have helped. But the damage is done. The elves and trolls are gone. The fairies divided. The dragons fight alone now. Be gone from my kingdom.
I stood there with my mouth open, stunned. We had come all this way, faced all those dangers, risked our lives, and now the mermaids would do nothing? We had come here for nothing? When we could have been searching the north to look for the imprisoned elves and trolls? Like a light switch, my shock and disbelief turned to anger, burning the common sense right out of my head. I glowered at their queen. How dare you call the elves your friends? You don't care about the trolls, the fairies. You sit here safe in your lake while your so-called friends suffer.
How dare you?
They're dying out there, and the elves probably wish they were dying. Do you know what King Eldric is doing to them? He's forcing the elves to choose between losing their magic or becoming dark elves. Slaves. You want to talk about the dragons sitting by and doing nothing? At least we're out there fighting. And don't think for one minute that when Eldric is done with the dragons, he won't turn on you, too. You sit here safe and sound until the end, and then there won't be anyone left to help you when it's your turn. I think the only reason I was able to say all that before one of their guards knocked me to the ground was that it was such a surprise. They didn't expect it. But then one did slam me down and stood over me with his trident, ready to plunge it right into my heart. I only survived because the queen shouted,
"Hold! Do not harm the young dragon!"
Every eye in the throne room flicked from me to the queen. They all looked surprised. Probably because she had let me talk to her like that without killing me on the spot. I wondered if she had even worse in store for me than just death, but I didn't care. I sat straight up, my fists clenched, staring her in the eyes, daring her to tell me I was wrong. For the first time, she rose from her throne. She glided to me and stopped 10 feet away, then floated there, looking me in the eyes. The way my heart was beating, every second seemed like a minute. I waited for my fate, too angry at her to care what she did next. If she didn't help, we were all dead anyway. She lowered her eyes and bent at the waist in a half bow, then said,
"Keeper, your words ring true, and they shame me. They shame us all. It is hard to imagine that a dragon so young spoke more truth than the mermaids."
I climbed back to my feet and looked at her suspiciously. I didn't know where it was going, but at least she hadn't yet ordered them to do something horrible to me or my friends. "My apologies for my outburst, Queen Desla. As a guest here, I shouldn't talk to you like that, but what you said made me so mad I just didn't know what to do with myself." She nodded slowly, considering. Then she said,
"The war is coming here sooner or later. If it comes sooner, we have allies who won't be there if it comes later. The only hope for all the elves, trolls, fairies, and eventually the dragons, is for the mermaids to stand up now and do what is right."
"Yes, stand up for the truth while you still can. I'm begging you. Help us save them all, and yourselves." I glanced over at Cairo and Eva and saw them staring at me incredulously. I'd surprised them just as much as I had the queen. Desla said,
"I accept your apology, Colton, Keeper of Dragons. I feel the truth in your words and the goodness in your heart. Your anger wasn't misplaced."
My heart leapt and my anger vanished. Excited, I blurted out, "So you'll help us? You'll march with us against the Elden?" The queen smiled, but I thought it looked sad, not happy.
"This still isn't our war. We always kept to ourselves, only helping the elves and the others during the last war because you dragons neglected your duties. As I said, if the elves can forgive you, surely I can."
She let out a long breath, her bubbles rising up and out of sight toward the ceiling.
"Alas, the mermaids will not march with you. However, I feel obligated to help our other brethren."
I wasn't sure what to think of that.
"What help will you give, then? We're grateful for any help."
"Instead of sending soldiers, I will send you wisdom and knowledge. I will help you by training you and your two friends here, showing you how to defeat Eldric and this new threat. With the knowledge we will give you, I'm confident you will win in the end. If you truly are the Keeper of Dragons, then fate will make sure that truth wins. Eldric and his lies will fall. This is the best we can do."
I was disappointed.
"The best you will do, you mean?"
For the first time, I saw Queen Desla's genuine smile, and it lit up her face. I didn't know what I had said that was so amusing.
"That's right. It's the most that we will do. If the legends are wrong, and the fates do not intend for you to win in the end, then we must look after ourselves, as we always have. I feel you were brought here for a reason, and I think that reason is to seek the wisdom and knowledge to stand up to Eldric yourselves, as the legends say you must."
From what little I heard of the legends, she had a point. I was still disappointed about the troops, though. But at least we weren't thrown out, or worse. Something told me the mermaids didn't allow outsiders in often, if at all. I guessed I would take what I could.
Chapter 14.
I was pretty sure that if we hadn't been in the middle of the Dead Sea, I would have been sweating a whole lot after the workout they gave us. The mermaid who put us through our paces said they only meant to get a feel for our physical condition. I guess that swimming everywhere his whole life gave him the kind of endurance and strength matched only by athletes. All I knew was that I was dog-tired after only an hour of swimming hard. I looked at him and said, "How did we do?" Cairo and Eva turned their heads to our conversation, probably trying to hear his answer.
"You are Okana's warriors, yet your stamina is like a mere child's. Humans and dragons must not train the way we do."
He smirked, but I sensed that he was just giving us a good-natured ribbing.
After the session, we were led back to the quarters they'd given us. It was a fairly large dome with entrances on both sides which angled down into the Dead Sea floor before coming back up again. The water had been pumped out, replaced with air, and it was actually pretty dry once we got inside. I glanced at my hands. I'd never seen them so wrinkly. I wondered if they might start rotting off with enough time in the water. We sat at the one table in the place, which had four chairs around it. I propped my elbows on the table and rested my face in my hands. Cairo said,
"Tired, are you? I can't blame you. All I want to do is sleep."
"Me too," Eva chimed in. She sounded as tired as I felt.
Cairo sat and rested his chin on one fist and drummed his fingers loudly on the table.
"Something on your mind?" I asked. "You look like something is bugging you."
He stared at the table, and I could almost see the gears turning in his mind.
"I'm just uneasy. We're here among the mermaids like Eva wanted, but they don't want to help us. We're basically at their mercy, right? I mean, we're underwater, their environment, their homeland. What if they decided to take the easy way out and try to buy Eldric's goodwill by turning us over? I don't know that we can trust these mermaids. Their reaction when we showed up was definitely not what I expected."
Eva let out a long breath and rolled her eyes.
"I understand how you feel, but really, if we're fated to win the war and push back the time of fear, then everything will turn out okay. We're stuck here for now, and we need them. So I suggest we do what they say and just go off the assumption they won't backstab us. What choice do we have but to trust them?"
Cairo shook his head, looking unconvinced.
"Yes, but if they betray us, we're in the middle of the Dead Sea. There's literally nowhere to go. We could never make it to the surface before they caught up to us.
I thought Cairo was being dangerously paranoid, so I interrupted him before he got on a roll and convinced himself to do something stupid. The mermaids haven't given us any reason to mistrust them. They made it clear they don't want to help us, but here they are, helping us anyway. And you're right, there's nothing we could do if they decided to betray us. So, no offense, but I think that as long as we're stuck here, it might be best not to make your fears be a self-fulfilling prophecy. Eva nodded.
Cole's right. The more you treat people like enemies, the more they will be, right? That's how it worked in high school, and it seems to be how it works out here in the so-called real world, too.
He grinned. So-called? What do you mean by that?
Still not convinced this isn't just all a bad dream.
She reached out and knocked his elbow out from under him, and his head almost hit the table as she laughed. I left them talking and play fighting and went to bed. I could barely keep my eyes open after the day's workouts. The next morning, we woke, dressed, and ate the meager breakfast someone had left on the table for us. As I returned the dishes to the counter, a splashing noise drew our attention to the entrance. A mermaid with a spear walked up the ramp from the air hatch. Once he could see all three of us, he said,
"Your presence is requested at the training grounds. Today's training will be different, so I hope you all got the rest."
I wanted to ask questions, but he turned around and left without another word. I turned to Eva and Cairo.
Yesterday's training was terrible, but I already feel stronger. No wonder the mermaids are supposed to be the strongest of us all.
Eva said,
"Yeah, they spent all day swimming, every day of their lives. It's like wearing weights around your wrists and ankles all the time. I guess we should get going."
We walked to the murky water at the bottom of the air tunnel, then swam through the town to reach the training grounds. At the field's far end, a small cluster of mermaids gathered, but I couldn't make out any faces. I figured those were our trainers for the day, so I veered a little to the right, aiming toward them. When we were about 20 feet away, I let myself drift to the bottom, then continued on foot. The small crowd of half a dozen stepped aside, revealing Queen Desla herself. She didn't smile, but she did nod in greeting, so I did the same.
"Keeper of Dragons, I hear your training yesterday went well," she said. "Today, I will be your instructor, while I work with each keeper individually to show you the ways of our Miriam magic. The other two will work with my hand-picked team of instructors to master our style of war. History has shown that not even the dragons can defeat us, unless we were greatly outnumbered. Ours is a defensive style that focuses on allowing our opponents to tire themselves while we wait for the opportunity to strike. That is when the fight usually ends."
I was in total awe.
"Mermaids have fought dragons before?"
She grinned and held her chin up as she said,
"No, of course not. We're all on the side of truth. But there have been, what do you call them on the surface? Joint training maneuvers? That's it. Long ago, we all used to train together. Dragons, elves, trolls, and many of the other good-hearted creatures of the world."
I hadn't been told that, but it made sense since the current war was supposed to be the closest the true beings had come to being defeated. And the fact that we had all stopped training together also made sense after the dragons had our time of being completely self-absorbed. In a way, I was kind of honored to be the first dragon to train with the mermaids in a long time, and I gave Desla a polite bow. She said,
"Cole, will you please follow me? We will get out of everyone's way to practice our water magic. I will instruct you personally. Cairo, Eva, will you please go with my instructors? Your training begins today as well."
Cairo bowed. Grinning back at her, he said,
"I thought yesterday was when our training started."
"If only that were true," she said, eyes twinkling. "But that was only the warm-up."
The other mermaids dragged my friends away and I followed Desla onto the sidelines. I thought the training arena looked a lot like a football stadium. When she took my hand in hers, I could feel a kind of energy flowing through everything around us. I hadn't noticed it the day before. I sensed an energy flowing between our touching hands, too. It wasn't Mahir, but it also wasn't